Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Tacos Fast 40, a fantasy NASCAR podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. Be sure to check us out using the link in the description and use promo code TACO for a lifetime 20% off. You'll get access to all of our daily fantasy sport offerings amongst all of the different daily fantasy sports that there are, along with private coaching channels, the Domination Station lineup optimizer, and of course the research station, which will give you all of the statistics you will need to dominate whatever sport it is of your choosing. Of course, we'll be referencing the NASCAR research station throughout this pod. And so remember, promo code TACO for a lifetime 20% off. That helps support the pod. Let's get right into it this week. We're going to Dover, a 1 mile, they call it the Monster Mile, Dover. And the track is quite a monster. Many drivers consider this to be one of, if not the hardest tracks on the NASCAR circuit. And, despite all that, it's actually one of the, easiest going tracks as far as, cautions and all that. While we don't have a total cautions prop up yet, usually we see only about four cautions outside of stage cautions here at Dover, and, with only 9.5% of the race being run under caution, that ranks number one of all NASCAR tracks on the circuit, and the only one that has less than 10% of the race run under caution. And then you combine that with the fact that usually there's just one dominant groove, and it's very, very hard to pass here. That kind of tells you what you're going to be looking for here at Dover. Definitely one of those tracks where track position is king. It's an older track, you know, last repaved in 1995, but it's a concrete surface, which is not like what we're used to on most tracks. Most tracks have an asphalt surface, but here at Dover and over there at Martinsville, they run on concrete. Bristol has kind of a half and half asphalt concrete kind of deal. It used to be a lot more concrete than it is, but of course, this track's a lot different than Martinsville. Martinsville is extremely flat, with only a 12-degree banking there. We have double the banking here, 24-degree banking on a 1 mile track. So double the banking, double the length of Martinsville, and it leads to a lot of sort of safe driving. You know, people love to run single file here. After a while, you can get dumped into the inside wall if you get out of line. And one of the main themes of this week we're seeing is that, you know, average speeds are going to jump up. It could be anywhere from 10 to 15 miles an hour faster than we're used to. And we've already broken lots of qualifying records, like we've seen in weeks prior with this package. And just like at Richmond, Phoenix, these other short tracks, we're doing the regular 750 horsepower package, just like we're used to. But again, the changes to the splitter, the spoiler, just making the racing a lot different out there. That and the fact that Goodyear is bringing along a new harder tire that's going to change a lot of the racing here. I think it's going to be you know, just like we've seen a lot so far this year, we're going to see more green flag runs than we're even used to. And this is the track that has more green flag runs than we're used to seeing. Just, you know, lots and lots of uninterrupted single file racing from one stage to another. That's sort of what we can expect. And while there's not as much, you know, as much of a focus on the top 10 drivers, like we see at like places like Darlington and Richmond, it still lends itself to that style of racing, sort of. It's a bit more spread out for sure. I mean, anyone starting in the top 25 pretty much scores fairly similarly. The top five still scores more than anyone else by about 8 fantasy points. But after that, you know, 6th through like 25th are all pretty darn similar. And with, you know, this is the place where guys starting 30th or farther back, they actually average the lowest percentage of fantasy points to the guys starting 30th or worse on DraftKings specifically. It ranks 6 out of 24 tracks in a FanDuel scoring from the guys 30th and back. It has to do with just a large number of laps available, but you know, that kind of is directly inverse with FanDuel. You know, the guys in the back and on FanDuel are pretty much always going to score more at tracks that have more laps with their total laps scoring metric. That's just always going to be the case, as where if you look at the tracks where the guys starting in the back 10 on DraftKings score the most, it's going to be your Talladega, Daytona, anywhere where they can get place differential. It is extremely hard to get place differential here. And the long runs usually lead to guys going lap after lap down. We have seen some really big dominations here. We're talking at least 7 guys, actually 8 guys that have scored, they've landed over 200 lead laps to themselves. And we even saw Kevin Harvick in the 2015 fall race lead 355 laps all to himself with 135 fast laps. And we've seen 3 people, all Kevin Harvick actually, lead over 200 laps with over 100 fast laps to go with that. So if you remember what Keselowski did at another track we just went to that had 400 laps, over there in Martinsville. Actually, that one had 500 laps, but you know, similar sort of story. And we saw him lead about 400 laps there. And you know, there's a chance you could see someone, certainly a chance we're going to see someone lead over 200 laps. It happens pretty much every time, most of the time here. But you're definitely going to see at least one person lead over 100 laps. Usually the way this goes, just looking back at the last few races, there's usually one guy that's like a mega dominator. We're talking, you know, scoring over 100 fantasy points. You know, the best way to do this, I think, is just to go to the historical section of the research station, then use the filters and just unfilter specific races, and you can see just based on fantasy scoring. Like last year in the fall race, Kevin Harvick, he led 286 laps with 104 fast laps here. Ended up finishing 6th, but it didn't really matter. He scored like 3 times as many fantasy points as anyone else with 157. And then after that, you know, the guys that scored the most, they didn't even like lead a lot of laps. Like Chase Elliott scored 67 just by winning the race. He only had 11 lead laps and 21 fast laps. And then Hamlin scored 62, finishing 2nd. No lead laps, just 14 fast laps. Really the only dominator behind Kevin Harvick was Eric Almirola, who ended up finishing 13th for the fourth most fantasy points on the board. He led 64 laps with 27 fast laps, and he didn't even make the optimal for FanDuel. He was not one of the highest scoring over there. He was on DraftKings, but not on FanDuel. The large amount of fast laps that go around to the faster cars here, kind of a lot more than you see at other tracks similar to this one. You know, if you have a faster car, usually there aren't people cheesing as many fast laps. You do get to that when you get to the pit strategy portion of this race. But for the most part, the guys with the fastest cars do rack up a whole bunch of lead laps. But you'll also see guys in the middle of the pack just picking up random fast laps here or there. sort of like you would see at a Bristol or Martinsville, but nothing like what you saw last week at Talladega, obviously, where they're pretty much randomly distributed about. So if you go back further, another race to the spring race last year, Kevin Harvick led 200 laps with 113 fast laps, so he did it again. Behind him was Keselowski, the secondary dominator. You know, Kevin Harvick scored over 150 again. Keselowski scored 80 with 108 fast lead laps and 28 fast laps, finishing sixth. And then Bowyer, who finished runner-up to Harvick, he led 40 laps with 26 fast laps, and he scored 75. Other than that, nobody scored over 50 fantasy points. You're going to just, you absolutely need to have whoever it is that dominates here, or you're not going to win anything in tournaments this week. Again, think back to Martinsville. What happened at Martinsville? Nobody played Brad Keselowski. And ultimately what happened, he got way more fantasy points than anyone else, and you weren't doing anything without having Keselowski on your lineup. So it doesn't matter what their ownership is. Whoever it is that ends up out there, I don't care if it's like, you know, Michael McDowell accidentally ends up there and somehow nobody ends up passing him all race long. Whoever it is, you need to have that guy or else you're completely screwed. So if you're a mass multi-entering, you're going to want to lock in minimum percentage on pretty much every possible dominator out there. Dover is a little bit less predictable than usual, but starting position does factor into finishing position here a lot more than you see at other tracks. But along with that comes, you know, the inevitable pit strategies and skipping on tires for track position. You know, the more valuable track position is, and the less valuable things like fresh tires are and stuff. With how the single file racing here is, and with how hard it is to pass, kind of sort of like how Richmond was. Whenever you see that, you're going to see the field get mixed up by pit strategy, and you'll have guys that gamble. You know, maybe try to stay out and just pray for a caution, or you could even have guys that pit right before the end of a pit stage or the end of a stage, sacrifice playoff points that other guys are going to stay out for track position in the next stage. You'll see things like that come into play. So that right there, you know, adds to a lot of the variance that we see at this track. But you can usually safely assume that the top 10 or so drivers at this track are pretty much going to finish as the top 10. The final position, you know, it's kind of up for debate. It used to just be Jimmy Johnson. He's won this thing 11 times. He's won it a bunch recently, too, but you know, recently he's definitely become a lot more vulnerable. And he was 25-1 to win the race, so he's definitely not guaranteed to do it again. In fact, they find it very unlikely, so you know, other people can start winning this race, and there's no one other guy that really sticks out as, you know, someone that wins here consistently and often. You've got a lot of guys actually up top that are really good at this track. Guys like Truex, Harvick, Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch at the short track, always something to look out for. Usually he's either, you know, finishing top two or wrecking. You know, that can happen here. You know, we don't see like huge wrecks usually, but towards the end of the race, you will see things get a little bit dicey, and you'll see some guys who get sent into the inside wall. As the third stage comes along or so, might be a factor, it might not be a factor, but you know, there is the potential chance that enough rubber gets laid down that the track starts changing significantly. Not sure if that'll create like a second groove that'll allow guys to pass, but it will change, you know, who's fast. I think that the guy that dominates the first or second stage may not even really be a factor come the third stage. Usually we see guys like good examples like Martin Truex Jr. at this race. Pretty much what you'd expect from him is for him to, you know, just sit back and chill, get his car ready, plan for what's coming up, how the track is about to change, and then come that third stage, he'll really just show up everyone as they kind of fall off. Not saying that he is the only person that knows how to do that, but, you know, that's a pretty fair example of someone that does that. at these kind of races where the track will change a bit over time. He's really good at getting his stuff set up for the future. I think that it's just these outside dominators are just a little bit more in play than usual. You've got Chase Elliott on the pole, but historically this track has not been too kind to the guys on the pole. Usually it just has really rewarded the best of the best drivers. We see, if you just look at all the total scores from now back through 2013, you know, it's most of the same drivers that get these 150 plus bombs. I think the only driver to score 145 fantasy points or more is Jimmy Johnson or Kevin Harvick, and they've done it a combined 5 times. But the other names you see up there, you see a few more Chevys than usual with Johnson's success here. You saw Kyle Larson in the 2017 spring race lead 240. You saw Jeff Gordon in the 2014 fall race win and score 111. Chase Elliott also really, really good here. Scored over 100 fantasy points as well in the 2017 fall race. And yeah, you see a few good performances from Larson. Johnson obviously owns this track historically. Yeah, just you just see Chevy's doing a little bit better than usual, and that's, you know, it's something definitely to look into after last week. The, you know, the manufacturer props are going to be, it might be a little bit telling. You know, we saw Chevy kind of drift the closer we got to lock. You know, they went from really hating them like they had been all season to almost putting them on par with the Toyotas, even though the Fords were still the favorite, just with, you know, how many good drivers they have up at the very top with how Penske's doing. But as for manufacturer stacks like we were doing last week, I really don't think you're going to have to do that much this week. This isn't really an aerodynamic track. It's pretty much about restarts. A restart's going to be a little bit important. And then throughout the long runs, you will see a long run speed come in. You know, later in runs, you might, you know, it's hard to really bank on that, though, because it is really hard to get out around guys. You just want the guys who check out and will just rack up dominator points, you know, for an entire stage. That is the, you know, that's the goal that you're after. You're constantly sifting through all the players, just looking for those, you know, the, I would say the Brad Keselowskis of this field, but, you know, Brad Keselowski is in this field and he's not necessarily guaranteed to be that guy. In fact, he really hasn't been that guy historically here. Outside of a few times. Yeah, we don't see Penske put up the huge finishes like we have, you know, at most tracks. The best performance from a Team Penske guy was Brad Keselowski in 2014 and 2018, where he got 87 and 81 fantasy points, leading around 100 laps each time. So we haven't seen them break the secondary dominator spot. And we haven't seen Logano lead any, if really met much of any laps here at Dover. This track has kind of escaped him a little bit. That said, he has a super fast car this week and he's starting near the front, so we're going to have to see. But, you know, it is kind of interesting to note that, you know, this race usually gives Chevys a little bit more love than usual, and the Penske Fords just looks like they take a little bit of a step back at this track. So yeah, looking at when deciding what tracks to use to compare here, we ran two different splits this week. Obviously, the 2019 stats, we're going to want to really look at that, and under the speed ranks, we're going to also want to look at the, you know, the other short track slash 750 horsepower races we've ran this year, places like Richmond, Phoenix, you know, the 1 mile and shorter tracks where I've ran this exact package. Going to be looking to that, but also to steep tracks, which are tracks like this, Darlington. You know, not the ones with like 12 degree banking. We're talking the ones like over, well over 20 degree banking. Places like Texas and Las Vegas. Threw those in, but didn't go any higher than 1.5 mile there. Really just stuck to, you know, the main ones being Dover and Darlington. And then we also ran the, you know, it's pretty much going to be a new addition to the research station, just the correlated track stats. So use the correlation section of the research station, and you can see which tracks correlate with Dover the most. And of course, the way we decide this is we look at each of the guys that have consistently drove every single race over the last few years for the same team equipment level. We ran all of their averages, our average driver ratings at each track, and just ran correlations between them and all the other tracks. So, we can see there are actually a few tracks here that not only are they the highest correlations with Dover, they're some of the highest correlations of any two tracks in all of NASCAR. You know, I explained last week how Daytona and Talladega, they have much, much lower correlations with other tracks, and there are barely any that come anywhere close to them besides each other, right? Well, Dover has some of the highest correlations. In fact, Dover and Pocono have the highest correlation between any two tracks. And it's kind of interesting how, a flat 2.5 mile track like Pocono would correlate so much with Dover. But you look at the other tracks that also correlate as well, you can pretty much see why. New Hampshire, Chicagoland, Richmond, Michigan, and Texas. These are all very, very fast tracks, first and foremost. You also see Las Vegas, Atlanta doing well here, Phoenix. They're very fast tracks. These are all pretty much lap turners, and they all have pretty much one main groove that everybody kind of prefers to go on. They tend to be single file races. I know places like Michigan and Pocono, they can spread out a little bit, but we've seen you can look especially to guys like Larson and Chase Elliott. Those guys very much stick out more at Pocono and Michigan, and they also do stick out this track, and it's a lot of the same guys that do better here than usual. Those are also other tracks where Chevys have done a little better. So that's just another really interesting split to put up there. You just kind of combine it with most of the other stats. Of course, I'd still look to the 2019 stats the most. And it's important to know what they're doing on the exact tracks similar to this one, and then the correlated ones, just to see where the data is leading with that. So you can get a few different angles to look at the guys based on. And then, of course, there's practice. Second practice was rained out. First practice didn't matter because that was pre-qual. Everybody was in qualifying trim. So this was after qualifying. They had third practice this morning after Xfinity qualifying. And got some, a good amount of laps in. Over 50, 60 laps for most of the big, important drivers here. So we're going to look to the long run speeds in that. And also we're going to kind of look to the five-lap speeds, even the fast speeds overall. That's always telling for ownership. But also, we want to get the guys who are going to gain some positions off of the restarts here. If you're going to gain any spots, that's where it's going to be. Unfortunately, most of the time, whenever there's a caution or pit stop, it's usually just a disaster. Not only do they have... It's probably the track that has the most... pit penalties. It's very hard to get into your pit stall here. And you also see a lot of speeding penalties here. So again, just adds to the variance, which, nobody really likes. You might try to avoid guys like, the newer rookie drivers or guys that have a lot of penalties like, Denny Hamlin. I don't think a lot of people are going to pick Denny Hamlin based on how we know he struggles with pit road penalties, even though he's constantly working on them. But that's going to be, something that comes into play here. That and the pit cycles just kind of leads to a lot of the positions being gained here kind of randomly, sort of based on, good strategy. Usually would kind of lead you to the likes of Keselowski and Logano, but they haven't really done a whole lot here. They have yet to win in the last 10 races. I'm not sure if they've ever won a race here. Even Blaney is yet to finish in the top five here. It's a little bit strange, but, usually we have seen, guys like Jimmy Johnson that just know how to drive here. just doing really well. So should be a lot of different ways that this could go. A lot of different options out there. I think based on what we saw from the Truck Series ownership and the Xfinity Series ownership, I think a lot of people are just going to go to the guaranteed fantasy points to the to Chase Elliott. And a lot of the reason I say that is because the restarts here, you don't want to be on the outside. You don't want to be on the non-preferred groove here when you're on the restart. You might even see guys slow down on purpose to try and get like the third spot instead of the second. So usually the guy that restarts first is going to be able to jump out to first. And that's kind of how we can see, guys just hold on to the lead all race long. So Chase Elliott's looking like some almost guaranteed points there, no matter how he's practicing or whatever. Throw that along with his amazing form here. I think that's the way the field's going to go. And we saw that with how ridiculously high-owned Custer was in the Xfinity race, for example. And it's something I think they're going to do this week, especially with Elliott coming off of a win and really finding the lead over the last, I think, like the last four races. If we look at the domination point percentage tracker on the research station here, we can see Chase Elliott last week he had 10% of the dominator points. Didn't have much at Richmond at all, just 0.5%, but 5% at Bristol, 10% at Texas, 15% at Martinsville. Just consistently finding some fast and lead laps wherever he may look. You don't see many guys do that week after week after week. You might see it like occasionally. Most guys don't, get over 2%. Especially over 5% week after week after week. Only, that's reserved for the guys like Kyle Busch way up top. But we have seen, Chase Elliott constantly just putting himself there and really just finishing races. Has some really solid finishes in a row here. Had that runner-up in Martinsville as well. So I think that's where the field's going to go here. So let's go into this field here. Just going to go by DraftKings pricing for this week. No need to go by starting position like last week, because that was a bit different. Here it's, we're not playing the guys in the back for sure on DraftKings, maybe on FanDuel, but we're avoiding the guys in the back this week. We want to take anyone we can from the front, but we're going to definitely want to focus on the guys in the very front, the ones that are going to be leading a majority of this race. And, the first and foremost candidates would be, Kyle Busch, Joey Logano, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Martin Truex Jr., Chase Elliott, those guys up at the very, very top. And we've also got Kyle Larson, who's starting third. And he's had a lot of lead laps at this track. He averages 46 even. And he's shown a lot of speed in practice, too. For only $8,000, he's also a dominator you've got to consider, even though he's been consistently low-owned and consistently underperforming all year long. You've also got William Byron starting second, only $6,700. He's had basically no ownership for several weeks in a row. This car looks decent enough. His teammates have shown speed. And there's always an off chance that somehow he could just work his way in front and then have teammates just chilling behind him. But it's a very, very small percentage chance. For the most part, we're going to want to focus on Kyle Busch, Joey Logano, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Martin Truex Jr., and Chase Elliott. Maybe even Ryan Blaney. We saw a lot of speed in his car the longer the runs went as well. These are going to be the bread and butter. If anyone's scoring over 100 fantasy points, it's going to be one of these guys. You're not going to see someone like a Kurt Busch or an Eric Jones, even a Clint Bowyer. No matter how good he is on short tracks, you're not going to see these guys get out there and lead all the laps. Those top-end guys are not going to allow that. If you go to DraftKings averages by start, at least that tab, you can see averages by season, average driver rating. The guys that average over 110 season-long average driver rating. So for this field, it would be Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch. Actually, if you go by this year, just Kyle Busch. So those guys average, we've had 14 of those guys race here at Dover, and they averaged 98 fantasy points, 134 lead laps, 63 fast laps. If you look at the guys with driver ratings between 110 or 100 and 110, you've seen 32 of those guys. Those are going to be your Keselowskis, Truexes, Logano's, and Kevin Harvick. Even, you know, Denny Hamlin is borderline. He's 99.8 right now. We'll even put him in there. And we'll even throw Blaney in. He's pretty darn close. I don't know. We might have to save Hamlin and Blaney for this next tier, but you get where I'm going at here. Those guys average 49.8 fantasy points. So a really big drop off there. They average about half the fantasy points. You know, the guys 110 plus, they hit 60 fantasy points 79% of the time. That's where the 100 to 110 guys only hit that 34% of the time. They only hit 80%, 19% of the time. That's where the 110 plus guys hit it 64% of the time. You know, those are going to be the guys hitting 100 plus. They do it half the time. As where no other split has guys doing it over 6% of the time. You're going, you know, it's looking like it's either going to be Kyle Busch or Kevin Harvick, going by the historical trends here. But, you know, we have seen some of the slightly outside guys looking in do that. But, you know, you go to the 90 to 100 fantasy points section there. So that's going to be your Blaney's, Hamlin's, Chase Elliott's, and that. They average 42. And then it just scales off after that. And if you score, or if you have, you know, an average driver rating 70 or lower, it's looking like 23 down to, you know, the scrubs averaging, well, you know, some of the lowest numbers on DraftKings compared to other tracks. So, again, you don't want to look at the studs here or the scrubs here. It's just all about the studs. And then for value, you basically just want to play. It's looking like you get most of your value from the place differential sort of guys. You just want whoever it is that happens to finish in the top 10, the top 7, just depending on how it shakes out. And especially on FanDuel, that's definitely the case. FanDuel, you basically want to just get the one guy that leads a bunch of laps, and then after that, you want to finish the guys finishing like first, second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever will fit. There's not much more to it than that. Of course, if you are out of the race for any reason and you don't get those 400 laps finished, you're completely dead in the water. Your whole lineup is dead in the water. So you kind of want to avoid the less safe guys over there. But that's how FanDuel always works every week. Everyone has a really, really, really high floor over there with the 400 laps. So, you know, you can be a lot more different, more easily over there on FanDuel. With everyone having a pretty similar expected range of fantasy points, you kind of really just want to be different over there. As we're on DraftKings, it doesn't matter, you know, how different you are. It doesn't matter the ownership. You just absolutely need to get those guys that crush up top. You just have to nail the dominators this week. So you're going to want to either mix it up or just really take some stands and hope that you hit it big, because you know, there's always that one guy that scores basically 100 more fantasy points than anyone else, and you just need that guy. I would not fade any of these guys, you know, Chase Elliott or higher. I would have all of them in at least some sort of format, so I don't, you know, just take a big zero at the end of the day, because, you know, that can happen if you fade someone and they're the dominator here. So, all right, let's go from top to bottom here. You've got Kyle Busch starting 22nd for $12,400, 15K on FanDuel, really begging you over there. Again, he's the 1S tier driver. You know, it's him and Harvick. The only guy's over 115 average driver rating here at Dover. And while he leads, you know, on average only like a third of the lead laps that Harvick does here at Dover, this year, you know, it's pretty much been all about him. Outside of that one you know, Martinsville race that really has driven up Keselowski's average lead laps up to 85. Still, he's the guy. Just leading all the laps, leading, or, you know, having the most fast laps, just absolutely dominant this week, this year. You know, averages, you know, per 400 laps, averages 50 fast laps. That's just 10 more than anybody else. You know, you see Harvick there at 38, so, you know, a lot of the value is going to be on him. He is the highest projected guy by, like, 14 fantasy points, or, no, it's 9 fantasy points over Harvick, but starting back in 22nd gets you a little bit of floor, but if he doesn't lead those laps, it's sort of irrelevant, because, say, for example, if Joey Logano is that guy that leads 200-plus, or Kevin Harvick or something, if he's that guy and Kyle Busch isn't, it doesn't really matter even if Kyle Busch comes up to, like, second or third and has a good place differential sort of finish. If you're playing Kyle Busch, you're playing him because you think he's going to get a ton of fast laps and lead laps like he sort of always does. You know, if you look at the domination point percentage again, at Auto Club in Phoenix, he had about half the dominator points there, all hogged to himself. Richmond, 19%. Texas, 16%. Bristol, 11%. And, of course, all the wins, too, that have gone to him this year. That and the fact that he wins a ton at short tracks. The win equity is going to do him pretty nicely on FanDuel. Even FanDuel, he would need to lead laps for 15,000. There, it's very, very much about who specifically leads the laps. But on DraftKings, he does have a chance to get a ton of fast laps. But he's not really liking his car that much. He was pretty vocal about it so far this week. Just not liking what the car's given him so far. He ended up with the fifth fastest 10-lap average, but still was quite frustrated with the thing. So I don't know if that'll drive his ownership down a whole lot. Not sure how many people figured that out. We saw his odds just kind of just dip a little tiny bit, but he's still the odds-on favorite, slightly over Kevin Harvick. You know, we've seen him. It's been a weird thing for him. Like, he always finishes top 10 in this spring race, but he always seems to crash in the fall race. Of course, it's not like, you know, a real like statistic. It just so happens to be that way. And also, he was saying himself how, you know, he feels bad for his pedigree sponsor, because whenever he's driving the pedigree car over the M&M's Skittles car, he also always crashes that thing. So if you're a superstitious person at all, I would not play Kyle Busch. I would fade that. But those reasonings aren't ground in anything tangible whatsoever. They're just circumstance. So it's a superstitious sort of play. I just thought it was very interesting how it's worked out, because it's like clockwork. He seriously like crashed out of... It was not the fall races he crashes out of. He crashes out of these spring races. That is it. Sorry for having it backwards there. He crashes out of the spring race like every single time. He also crashes a lot in the pedigree car, so I don't know if that's just concern trolling or what. It's just funny how that's worked out, because, like, if you look at his finishes at the fall race over the last few years, 8th, 1st, 2nd, 2nd, 10th, 5th, that was where the spring race is here, 35th, 16th, 30th, 36th, 42nd. He did finish 4th in the 2013 spring race. I'm sure if you go back even farther, you'll find some good finishes, if not maybe even some wins from him here in the spring race, but... Again, it's just kind of funny how it works out. If you're looking for a reason to fade Kyle Busch, I might have just given you one. I mean, you know, if you need a little nudge to help you fade some chalk, you know, if you're someone that intends on fading the chalk, but, you know, kind of chickens out ultimately, it might just help you, you know, push you in the right direction and being a little more contrarian, which I would recommend this week with, you know, how... you know, how much leverage it's going to get you to just be heavier on the lower-owned alternate dominators this week. Of course, if it does end up being Kyle Busch, you know, whatever. But even then, his salary won't even matter. You'll just need him. But anyway, you know, I'm probably going to personally avoid Kyle Busch. Not for the superstitious reasons, but just for the fact that he was frustrated with his car. You know, he is... You know, no matter what split we're looking at here, he does have the fastest car. He's had the fastest car all year long. But starting back in 22nd, that's going to affect him a lot more here at this track than other tracks where he'll be up to the top in no time. He will have to seriously work his way up for the first stage or so. So if he's blocked out of those fantasy points for lead and fast laps, especially when, you know, the first stage, usually the leader will also get fast laps with that. You know, it does make a lot of sense for me to go just Chase Elliott or whatever instead of Kyle Busch. But moving right along, Joey Logano, $11,400. He's starting 4th, so he gets a pretty direct route to some early dominator points, and he's kind of done that a lot more this season than he has in years past. He still kind of struggles with fast laps a bit compared to the lead laps he gets, but The top five seems to be where he likes to run, for the most part. The main concern here is the fact that him leading laps here would be completely unprecedented. He averages under one lead lap per race here. We've just seen the lead laps go to other guys historically, mostly, you know, Harvick and Jimmy Johnson. And like I was mentioning earlier, you know, Penske just has not really performed as well here. And he's also very expensive, so I think he's going to be lower owned, even though his game log's starting to look pretty pretty at this point. But he was second in 15, 20, and 25 lap averages, and first overall in 30 lap averages. Of course, a lot of the reason for that is the guy that was number one in 15 and 20 lap averages, Kyle Larson, didn't make a run that long. Again, I'm not sure how much we're going to be looking into practice, but we are going to be looking a bit more into the longer run speeds, which will help guys, you know, maintain their track position here. You don't want to fall behind because you'll get lost in the back of the pack if that's the case. And, you know, Logano's proven to know how to stay in the top five, and that's a very valuable skill to have here. So I do not mind Logano at all. He's a really nice little play. I just, you know, I'm a little bit worried about how he usually doesn't lead laps here. And I could very easily see him just being stuck in like third place all race long and ultimately not doing anything, not getting faster, lead laps, just kind of be in there. And then if anything happens to him, he becomes a completely useless play. So I like him in GPP for GPP purposes, but, you know, not feeling him as much as I am at a lot of other tracks we've been to. I prefer tracks where he has historically dominated and dominated recently. Kevin Harvick at $11,300. This is a guy that has dominated, and he's dominated very recently. He won this race last year, and the last few races he has just dominated, leading about half of the race each time. Averages 117.6 lead laps here with 58.8 fast laps. I know that Harvick has taken a step back this season. He's probably left Kyle Busch as the only S-tier driver in NASCAR. Stuart Haas Racing has yet to record a win. And, you know, Harvick not having a win at this point after him having, like, what, four or five wins at this point already this time last year with every finish being a top 10. It's still sort of the case for Harvick. He's definitely a fixture in the top 10. He just has not been dominating like we're used to. In fact, we haven't seen a top three finish from him all year long. We've seen four fourth place finishes at Richmond Auto Club, Las Vegas, and Atlanta, but we have yet to see him win, let alone finish in the top three. Like, he would have no medals as it stands right now, which is interesting for Harvick. So this could be a bit of a litmus test for how we're going to look at Harvick through the rest of the year. When you look at the correlated track stats, he sticks out like a sore thumb. All the tracks that correlate highly with Dover, he just crushes. You know, 130 average driver rating on these tracks, and Kyle Busch is in second behind him at 112. It's not really that close. You know, this is very close to a lot of tracks he's good at, like you know, Texas. He's good at the 2.5 mile ovals there, the speedy ones like Michigan, Pocono. Obviously very good at Phoenix. And of course here, he's like the best at Dover, besides Jimmy Johnson. But at this point, you could even argue that he's better than Jimmy Johnson now, especially with the, you know, the domination we've seen from him very recently. But we all know that Stuart Haas Racing was a lot faster last year than we've seen so far this year. His speeds in practice were, you know, top five or so. He was second in 30-lap averages. Only five guys took that many. You know, Ryan Blaney was first in 25-lap averages, but didn't take 30 laps. I'm sure he would have been first over Harvick there. And Logano was also faster there. But still, starting sixth, he does have a route to some fast laps. If it goes like how it's been going for him so far this year, he's going to be kind of like Logano and just kind of stuck in the top three, top five. We have seen him just not dominated or dominating in places where he's dominated in the past, mainly looking at Phoenix there. You know, he did lead some at Atlanta. Not a whole lot, though. It was Las Vegas and Atlanta. He led about a quarter of the race at Las Vegas, 13% of the race in Atlanta. But, you know, skip last week because Talladega, it's whatever. But Richmond, we saw them lead 11% of the race, or not lead, but get 11% of the dominator points, what I mean. You know, Bristol 12%, but Texas 2.5%, Martinsville 4%, Auto Club 1%, Phoenix 3%, just not what we're used to seeing from Harvick. So he's not like a cash game safe play or anything like you would think that he would be here. Just someone that you're going to get some GPP exposure to. I think he'll still be popular with just his results, especially both of his dominating performances here last year. But I do, I'm going to be a little bit more bearish about Harvick than I usually am. And I usually love Harvick. I love rostering Harvick and using him, especially after last year. But it's obvious that he has taken a little bit of a step back here. So this will also be a pretty decent litmus test for Mr. Kevin Harvick, or I don't know why I said also. I think that was the guy I said about it originally, but love to see how he does. Brad Keselowski at $10,700, $1,100 cheaper than Logano. I like seeing that. You know, a lot of the year he's been that guy instead of Logano, like we saw at Martinsville. And of course, at Martinsville, he just, you know, absolutely destroyed that track. And again, that was coming in at, what, 12, 13, 14% ownership, depending on what contest you were playing. Here, he's projecting around that sort of ownership again, somewhere between, like, 12, 15, 16%. Just going to be sort of an overlooked play, I think. I know Logano, his recent game log is looking a lot better than Keselowski's. And, you know, Keselowski does not... he has more of a recent history of, you know, leading laps and getting some fast laps here at this track in particular, but outside of Martinsville, he hasn't really dominated large portions of the race. We saw him get 17% at Auto Club, but other than that, no race he's had more than 10% of the lead laps, even though he's won a few already early this season at Atlanta and Martinsville. And we're basically going to see what we usually sort of see from Keselowski. And Logano, you know, they'll try alternate pit strategies. It's a pit strategy race. You can be almost certain of that. And, you know, it's kind of a gamble playing these guys. They're not cash game safe, obviously. But, you know, being able to make moves like that and having your playoff spot locked in is going to be very helpful for, you know, these guys potentially putting themselves up front. And with their ownership being lower, you know, that's also kind of what I want to see. So I'm going to be overweight on Keselowski. Not sure about Logano yet because he costs so much. I would have to really, really not play Kyle Busch and even get some Harvick exposure down. Not sure what I want to do there yet, but I will be looking to these guys, especially Keselowski, for getting my low-owned dominator fix in. And then you've got Martin Truex Jr., $10,200. He's just put up a really good string of finishes here. Top 15 finishes, 10 races in a row. But yeah, the win here in 2016 with several top fives following that. Just the 15th place for place finish here in the 2018 fall race, kind of ending a streak of really, really good finishes. But he was second fastest in that final practice. Third in the 10-lap speeds, but kind of fell off a little bit after that. Still ultra-consistent. Has looked really awesome at the shorter tracks, no matter what or what they are, really. Pretty much a fixture of the top 10. Starting in 13th, it gives him a little bit of value there, but again, we're going to need to see the fast laps and lead laps from him. And he has done that in the past. He averages 47 lead laps, 31 fast laps here. And we mostly saw that in the 2016 fall race where he started second, had an average running position of first because he led so much with 187 lead laps and pretty much never leaving the top two to post 134 fantasy points there. So he's done it before, and he could do it again, honestly. He hasn't really dominated like that this year, but we did see him lead 23% of the race. Or get 23% of the dominator points at Richmond. So it is possible. Starting 13th, with him being very likely to finish top five, that's probably going to be pretty good for, not sure about FanDuel. He's still a little expensive there, but just a good safe play to use overall. Yeah, definitely one of the safer plays with Howe. Just his nose for fast laps, and you know him him actually averaging the second most lead laps at Dover, or third most lead laps at Dover, behind only Jimmy Johnson and Kevin Harvick. Now, going down to our pole sitter here, Chase Elliott, going to be the chalk. I don't know if he breaks 40%, but I wouldn't be too surprised. All top five finishes here, outside of the 12th at the 2018 spring race. And that culminated with a win last year in the fall race in the playoffs. It was a really clutch win there. And, yeah, he didn't dominate as much as he did in the 2017 fall race, where he led 138 lead laps, but you know, still a good performance from your boy Chase. You know, he didn't dominate much at all when he won, just led 11 laps, but he led the ones that mattered. Yeah, so with him coming off the win, and what's his dominator point percentage? Yeah, he's four out of the last five races. He's dominated at least over 5% of each race. He's found his way to the front, you know, each and every time, not just getting the fast laps, but finding the front in one way or the other. Here he's pretty much gifted that off the get-go, and should get fast laps when he finds the immediate clean air. Always a chance that he does mess up the, you know, the restart or something, but here at this track, it's safer than most other tracks when it comes to the pole sitter, but not really the pole sitter, but just the guy that starts off the restart. They usually have a pretty easy chance of checking out immediately. You know, we did see Truex give, I think it was Logano, no, it was Harvick last year, a really good run for his money off the initial start, but you know, for the most part, Chase Elliott should be pretty safe for at least the first chunk of laps, and even after that, you know, with how he does at this track, he's gonna stick around in the top 10 all day. He could lead more, you know, he could lead like stage 2 or stage 3 or somewhere in there alongside his initial run there, so the play makes a lot of sense. The price is pretty much whatever for him, doesn't matter. He has the highest, or the lowest, I guess, average finish of anyone here, and he's raced here 6 times. The play kind of speaks for itself. This kind of track, you know, those guaranteed dominator points, I really can't blame anyone for eating that chalk. It's some very good chalk. $9,500, Denny Hamlin. Runner-up last year, but I don't see a lot of a case for him starting 8th. I do like a lot of the other guys around him more, and I think his game log looks good enough. I know they crashed last week, but I think most people know to not really care about Talladega stuff when looking at recent form. If you go back outside of that finish, or lack of a finish there, he you know, has a really, really solid run of like top 10s. You know, yeah, it's 5th, 5th, 1st, 5th, 7th, 5th, 10th, 11th, 1st. That's a really solid game log to have, and for $9,500, starting 8th, you know, him finishing in the top 5, it does make a lot of sense. He has the second lowest average finish behind only Kyle Busch this year. So I don't see him getting unpopular at all, which is why I'm pretty much fading him. Gonna have a decent portion of him, but I think most of the other plays in this range are going to be a lot better. I mean, Chase Elliott, it's almost guaranteed for him to get the dominator points, but I don't see it much happening with Hamlin, and he's not really done that in the past either. Ryan Blaney, $9,200. Like I mentioned earlier, had some good long run speed in this car from what we saw in practice, and we also saw it from his teammate Logano. So, yeah, that is interesting. We have seen Blaney and Logano clearly take a step up this season with the change to the aerodynamic package. So, you know, Ryan Blaney, Logano, these guys, they've been lower owned. We even saw Blaney be lower owned last week, which is not something we usually see. You know, people do like playing Ryan Blaney a lot, but, you know, this week I think he's going to go overlooked, starting 11th. Almost sort of a dead zone, but I do like, I don't mind that spot at all. Usually 10th through 15th, I kind of avoid that for most tracks, but here at this track, I think it's perfectly fine. I'm going to try to be well over the field. I know he's yet to lead a lap here, let alone have a top 5 finish, but He averages 44 lead laps per 400 laps, so about 10% of the time he's led a lap on the season. Just a guy I'm very bullish on, looking to get back on him after, you know, having to not play him last week with how he started so high. $9,200, the price is very good now, so I don't mind Blaney. Hope the long run speed is legit. Just a nice little contrarian dominator. You've got Kurt Busch at $8,900. I think that price is a little, it's a little, what am I trying to say? It's tempting, I guess, for most people. $8,900. He had been in the 9,000s for a few weeks, and, you know, his finishes are still quite awesome. His game log looking kind of like Hamlin's, you know, 6th, 11th, 2nd, 9th, 12th, 6th, 7th, 5th, 3rd. That's some really good finishes in a row for him, and he's starting 19th, so he's like his brother Kyle, but a massive discount. So I think he's going to be popular, 30%+, certainly. He finished 5th here both races last year, but historically he struggled here a little bit. He has 3 5th-place finishes, but other than that, in the last 12 races, no finish better than 12th. So it could be a tactical fade spot there as well. You could fade both Busch Bros, and that'd be a nice way to get away from 30% of the field both ways. Right now, we have them both projected around the same in ownership, just over 30%. So, starting 19th, in cash games, it makes a whole lot of sense to go ahead and just play him there, especially with him not being in the 9,000s anymore. Just makes for a nice little third play, but I really do prefer the lineup construction of picking two top tier dominators and then either three punts and then one mid or upper mid tier play, or just four kind of value sort of plays there. But I think two dominators is honestly the way to go. Maybe one big dominator and two mini dominators, like a Blaney, or it'd have to be like a Boyer or something like that. But still, I don't have a lot of room for guys like Kurt Busch in my lineup spots, unless I am just going to focus on the one dominator followed with a mini dominator. And it's going to depend on how cheap they are. I think Kyle Larson will be that guy in a lot of spots. With him only being 8,000, I'll pair him up with Kurt Busch a good amount as like the third guy. That could be a possible way to make a roster there. But yeah, Kurt Busch safer, but going to get that ownership. Be that as it may, I don't see him dominating. I really just don't. He's yet to lead a lap here. He averages 0.7 lead laps here, my bad. So he can lead, it's just very, very unlikely. Eric Jones, $8,700. He's starting 15th. I think he's always overowned for what he is. His price is really good on a FanDuel. He's significantly cheaper in comparison to the other guys. When you look at DraftKings compared to FanDuel, he is someone that sticks out in price over there. Well, it was pretty fast in practice, fastest 10-lap average, third fastest on the board. I think people might notice that and the fact he finished fourth here last year in the fall race. But for the most part, he's, you know, starting 15th, he'll probably move up a few spots. Usually tends to finish between 10th and 15th or so. That's about what you can expect here. Maybe he'll crack the top 10 if he really does have a faster car. But you know, I really don't mind not playing him at $8,700. He's getting a little expensive there, and he's usually owned more than he's worth. I've kind of found that over the years. People really do like rostering Eric Jones, maybe a little bit more than he's actually worth. That's just my opinion there. Going down to Clint Boyer at $8,500. You know, very good at short tracks. We know this. He's if you look at the tracks in specific, the 750 horsepower tracks you've been to, so Martinsville, Bristol, etc., Richmond, Phoenix, his stats are third, really. Actually, honestly, they're probably second to Kyle Busch, really. He's about sixth or fifth in every stat, you know, fifth in just average green flag speed, sixth in just overall speed, and this is, you know, compared to everyone on the board on average. So he's six, but in this field, that actually puts him as second. You know, he's tied with Keselowski behind only Kyle Busch, who averages about 5.5 in the fast lap average speed, in the speed rank. So Very, very fast at these types of tracks. Crashed in the fall race last year, but before that, runner-up in the spring race here. And sixth in that fall race. Of course, also crashed in the 2017 spring race. And someone is racing down my road, I swear. Well, hope they're having a good time. But, yeah, so not going to go much farther back than that with Clint Bowyer, since that was with, you know, BK or Michael Waltrip Racing, etc. It's always important to remember that. You can kind of scratch out anything past a 2017 with Bowyer. But even then, had a lot of top 10s with Michael Waltrip Racing here at Dover. So he's starting 10th. I don't think his ownership gets too crazy. And he's definitely someone I am keeping an eye on, because this exact package that we've raced so far at Richmond, at Phoenix, wherever, he's obviously raced like significantly better than he has at the other tracks. So them starting 10th, I don't know about him leading laps. He averages four lead laps here, sorry, with 12 fast laps. I just think at $8,500, he could move into the top five. I think he definitely has a chance to finish top five. And if he gets enough fast laps, it won't really matter. There are tons of laps to go around here. And he could find the front, honestly. He's only raced here really only two times with Stuart Haas Racing because of the two times he's crashed. So I like him as a contrarian play there. Then you've got Eric Almirola, $8,300, his teammate. You know, very good at the top 10s also, but he's starting 7th, and I think he's even less likely to lead laps. I know that he averages more lead laps here at Dover and just on the season so far, but I don't know. I guess it is true that Almirola probably has more of a chance I usually give him to find his way out in the lead. He's been leading at places where he hasn't been before. You know, he, until this last year, again, 2017, or the 2018 season, he started with Stuart Haas Racing replacing Danica. Before that, he was in the 43, which sort of was like Bubba's car, but remember, Bubba's a Chevy now. They were Ford back when Almirola drove with them. So anyway, he was 5th in practice speeds, but didn't run nearly as many laps as a lot of the other guys up here, running under 40 when a lot of guys went 60 or higher in the total laps. But still, just kind of a mediocre play for me. It might be an alternate dominator, but I think his chances of him actually dominating are pretty low. But he'll probably finish top 10, but I just don't see him like winning you anything, you know? And then you've got a really polarizing play. Jimmy Johnson, $8,200. I don't really know where to go here, because he was fastest in practice. That's, yeah. And he had the fastest 5-lap average, but only the 14th fastest 10-lap average. He didn't take too many seriously long runs, though, like a lot of other guys were focusing on. I do like the fast. He had the fastest 5-lap average and stuff, so I think his restarts might be pretty decent. Obviously, he knows how to drive here. He crashed in the fall race here last year, but 9th in the spring race. Before that, in 2017, he finished 13th in the fall and won in the spring. Of course, he won the 2015 fall spring race, 2014 spring race, and the 2013 fall race, and a bunch of times before that. I will definitely own him more than I usually do. I tried to own him last week, and he kind of screwed me over there, but he's the best at Dover outside of Harvick and Kyle Busch. Obviously the best at Dover all time, but when looking recently, I'd put him, you know, just 3rd. I might even have Truex above him if you're looking really recently, but still, it's hard to deny what he does here. Ownership's going to be really high, and you're going to have to just eat that, especially with him being fastest in final practice. But yeah, if there's any place where Jimmy Johnson's going to sneak a win, it's going to be here at Martinsville. That'd be the number one track. Or not Martinsville, gosh, Dover. But Martinsville would be the number two track where he'd sneak in a win. Probably Homestead, actually, but we won't worry about Homestead till the end of the year. Anyway, Jimmy Johnson, it's hard to really make a choice. You know, the field's going to be on him if you want to fade. Then by all means, go for it. But with how fast his car actually is, I mean, he really does have a fast car this week. And, you know, we saw just not too long ago, he unloaded a really fast car at Richmond, was it? Yeah. Or was it Texas? Texas, of course. Started on the pole in Texas, another track that he historically has done really well at, probably his fourth best track behind Martinsville, Homestead, and here at Dover. Those are the four tracks he really, really excels at, and he was able to lead all of Stage 1 with, of course, he had a chaperone of his teammates, but if you look where all his teammates are, his teammates, Chase Elliott's right on the pole, Bowman in fifth, Byron in second, so he could definitely find his way out there. I just really do think that if they do, I think it's going to be Chase out there in first with Jimmy Johnson behind him, but I don't know. At his track, they might tell him to push Jimmy out there. I think the fans would really want to see Jimmy win another one. Not saying it's all set up or anything, but if it were to end up that way, I bet Jimmy Johnson winning would be pretty popular with the fans. So be that as it may, we've also got Kyle Larson, who looked great in practice. Finally, I mean, I think he has looked good in practice a few times this year, but he's been just so underwhelming. His ownership has pretty much fallen down the toilet, and I tried to capitalize on that last week, and it was looking really good till towards the end when it didn't look good anymore, but probably going to have to keep on doing that here. So he finished runner-up in the 2017 spring race, 2016 spring race, and those came with a ton of lead laps. In the 2017 spring race, he led 241 lead laps with 78 fast laps for 144 fantasy points. In the 2016 spring race, it was 85 lead laps, 37 fast laps for 102 fantasy points. Of course, he started 23rd and finished 2nd there. He starts 3rd, so he's right there. He could get a lead early if he can somehow find a way around Chase Elliott. We know from last year he was very good on restarts but struggled with longer speeds. Here we see him, you know, he was 4th in overall speed but 3rd in 5 laps. 2nd and 10 lap averages, and then 1st and 15 and 20 lap averages from what we saw at practice. Wish we got multiple practices in, but from what I can tell, if I know I keep saying to just play Larson and he keeps on just screwing people over and over, and more people are writing him off, but at $8,000 alone, he is a super cheap dominator. Again, we're probably going to tell the domination station to, if at least do at least one dominator in each lineup, but there's even definitely a case to be made for saying at least two dominators with how important they are here. And Kyle Larson will get you a dominator on the cheap. I think the DS is going to like that a lot, no matter how he's projected. So Kyle Larson probably going to want to allow a little bit more exposure than you may feel comfortable with, but I think it could pay off for you this week. I've got Ryan Newman at $7,900. Crazy how those two are like right next to each other in salary now, with Kyle Larson 10-1, Ryan Newman 100-1. But anyway, Newman's had some really solid finishes over the last few weeks, and they've been at tracks that he is specifically very good at, and usually is good at the shorter tracks. And you think that tracks that are hard to pass at, that you can block at, he would be decent at. But outside of a fourth place finish in the 2017 spring race, he's yet to finish in the top 15 since 2015. Nothing looked terribly great in practice. Starting 21st is cool, I guess, but he's really starting 22nd if you think about it. He's just scored from 21st, because what are the chances that he doesn't get passed by Kyle Busch right behind him immediately? I think the chances of that are pretty low. So he kind of loses one off the bat right there. And $7,900 is really expensive for Ryan Newman, riding the Bane train, that number 6 Ford Roush car. I'm kind of not too interested in that, but there's sort of a lack of plays in this 7K range, honestly. There's one obvious one, but other than that, you know, this is sort of a range where I think some ownership could get mixed around here, but I think people will end up on Newman, especially if they're game logging at all. His last few finishes, he's finished 7th, 9th, 9th, and 11th. And that could get some people on him, and I kind of like to fade that, especially with him almost being 8,000. Like, that's a real expensive price for Newman, who sometimes we see in like the 6K range. But moving along here, Daniel Suarez at $7,700. He's starting 14th, but I think he will be he'll he'll get fairly popular, I think, by the time everything's said and done. He's finished top 10 here in every single race over the last 4 years that he's raced at. All four races here, he's finished 6th, 8th, 3rd, and 10th. So, combine that with the fact that he's got the 6th fastest lap on the board, top 7 in every lap average split, 3rd in the 30-lap split. So he took a very long run there, really trying to get that car to go. I think he took the most laps of anyone, the second most laps of anyone, behind only Joey Logano. So Suarez, I think, will get popular. When you see four straight top 10 finishes in a row for a guy in the 7Ks, that's going to lead to some ownership every time. I know he's not leading laps or anything, but his recent finishes have been awesome. And he was the chalk last week, and he kind of almost paid for himself. He's been kind of chalky a lot over the last few weeks, and he's kind of paid himself off. 3rd in Texas, 8th at Bristol, 10th at Martinsville. You know, his finishes have been solid, and most of the time he's finishing better than 14th. So I think that's a place where a lot of people will go, but I do just like this play a lot. Just knows how to stick around and finish well. Starting 14th, I think it's a really solid spot for him to move up a little bit, and he's cheap enough to where he doesn't have to worry about being a dominator. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at $7,500. With him finally succumbing to his nickname this year and being Recky over the last few weeks, I think people are going to stay away from him. And starting 20th, he could move up a little bit. Most recently, he finished 9th here. Not a lot of top 5 finishes from him. In fact, I don't think he's finished better than 8th here ever. But if he finishes top 12, pretty much, I think that'll do it. And, you know, I don't see him getting fast laps. That's not really something he does, but he actually has found the lead here in the past. He averages 3.5 lead laps. I don't see it happening, but, you know, with pit strategy and stuff, I mean, who knows? Maybe. I mean, we've seen him lead in places where we haven't expected him to a few times this season, and, you know, he's just, he's going to be a guy right in the lucky dog spot, I think, a lot of times this race. Him and Newman kind of around this little area, and even Suarez as we get later in the race. Like, this little range, Austin Dillon also, are going to be guys that I don't think will go a lap down, but they might get down to, like, the lucky dog spot. If you go back farther than them, you might find guys who run into trouble just going laps down, which completely curbs their upside. So, yeah, next you've got Austin Dillon starting 16th for $7,400. He finished 7th last year in the fall race here. That was his best finish ever. He usually finishes outside of the top 20 here. I think he is a remarkably mediocre play, honestly. I see a little bit of upside for him, but not a ton. Starting 16th, what's his upside really? Finishes between like 7th and 10th, maybe. Maybe like 5th through 10th or something, which would be all right, but I don't know if that's really like in the nuts optimal. And I don't see him leading laps. That's not really going to happen. Might squeak out some fast laps, but he's not leading anything. I think Stenhouse does have a lot more of a chance to lead than Dillon does. Suarez and Newman as well. Pretty much everyone we've talked about. Dillon's the first guy that I'm pretty sure is not going to lead a lap. Pretty much no matter what here. I could eat those words, obviously, but that's not really just, it's not really something he does. In general, he averages under 1 lead lap so far this season, and he's never led a lap here before. I think a lot of people are going to be drawn to the play right underneath him, Chris Buescher, starting in 30th. He's yet to do anything here. He debuted with an 18th place finish in the 2016 spring race, and since then, he has yet to crack the top 20. The closest he came was a 20th place finish in this 2018 fall race. But even if he finishes 20th, that's still 10 positions up from his 30th place starting spot, which should be good enough for like 35 fantasy points, which is okay enough. It could work out. And we've seen him just perform a lot better this season than in years past. So we can really honestly bump his upside a little bit too. You know, he might finish between like 15th and 20th, and that might get her done starting in 30th, honestly. Very good cash game sort of play. I don't know about making it like a super core play, because this isn't really the type of track that he excels at the most. You know, he should run about like 20th, 21st. That sounds about right. Get about 30 to 35. Maybe a little tiny bit more fantasy points than that, but I don't see him squeaking out faster lead laps. That's not what he does here or in general. He's more of a, just a place differential play, but, you know, you're going to want to find the value guys that can get you at least some, like, fast laps, and lead laps would be a huge bonus. Not going to get that from Buescher. Matt DiBenedetto, $7,200. His best finish here is 27th in 8 races, so he has that not going on for him. Yeah, not good here. Just not good. I mean, just he has a driver rating under 40 at Dover, which is harsh. I mean, all the guys we're about to talk about after him, a lot of the guys in the 6K range, they all have a better driver rating than him. You have to go down to like Corey LaJoy to finally find someone with a worse driver rating than him at Dover. Yeah, he's this is just not a place where he's going to be strong at. And I know he's in much better equipment now, but even still, starting 17th, it's just too high for him to do anything. I really don't like this play at all this week. And then you've got an obvious fade here, Alex Bowman starting 5th. I know he finished like 3rd last week or something, but that's Talladega for you. Starting 5th, you could pretty much safely uncheck him. I know that, you know, running position and all is important, but I really doubt he leads. I know he has led some laps here in the past. He averages 5, but if anything, just put the lightest of sprinkles on him starting 5th. But I really just don't see him leading, especially when you've got Chase Elliott there and Byron ahead of him to begin. He's not going to really push any issues early on, and I don't see him finding the lead outside of that unless it, you know, comes through like pit strategy or something. And then you've got, I might as well just talk about William Byron real quick, $6,700 starting 2nd. Again, just a really, you know, no one's going to play him. You're not going to play him. It just doesn't make sense. 7th in practice and all, but didn't show long run speeds really. I think he's definitely conceding to Chase from the get go, and he's not going to pass Chase. It's not really gonna happen. Probably fall back to like 5th after the restart's all settled out. And he might stick around. He has a nose for sticking around the top 10, but he will slowly fade, and we'll see him end up with the, I don't know, like 15th place finish or whatever that he pretty much deserves. That's about what I see from him. So he's a guy going backwards almost for sure. Then to finish out the 6K range here, you got a few decent options that did well last week and could get some eyes on him. Like Ryan Preece, obviously. He finished, what, 3rd last week? Yeah. Finished 3rd. Crazy Talladega stuff right there. Starting 29th. I think, you know, people are going to definitely notice that. If it's anything like Allmendinger, what he did with this car, because we know that Preece actually hasn't raced here in the Cup Series yet, but he's in the Allmendinger car that always preferred the flatter tracks over the steeper ones. Maybe just something to keep in mind there, but definitely not going to have anywhere near the upside of last week. That'd be a mistake to think. Starting 29th, though, I think he does move up 5 to 10 spots easily, and with how I'm fading a lot of the plays around here, he's probably going to be someone that I end up working in. I just know he's going to get a little ownership. I'm not going to be sneaky at all. On FanDuel, actually, I like to play a lot more. I don't think as many people are going to punt that low, and he's a really, really nice punt to afford the expensive guys. I did skip over Paul Menard since he was sandwiched around those Hendrick guys, but Paul Menard, $6,900, starting 18th, should move up some spots fairly safely. I don't see him cracking the top 10, but that's pretty much what we expect from him. Decent little FanDuel play again, $6,900, maybe not the worst DraftKings play. He's one of the few guys in the 6K range that I don't think is going to get lapped ultimately, maybe towards the end, but should just chill around the top 15 or so and could end up, you know, he's kind of overperformed a few times recently. Top 10 wouldn't be the most bizarre thing, but I still wouldn't expect it. Probably about a 30 fantasy point kind of guy. Ty Dillon, $6,400. The people have always expressed that they love Ty Dillon, and they'll always own him more than they really ought to. And starting 25th, this is the first track in a while that we've seen where he doesn't have insanely good history going in, like we have the last few weeks. I think that his recent performances, if we look at Talladega, a place where he has all those top 20 finishes at, he did it again last week with a 17th. Richmond, also good there, finished 21st there. And Bristol, very good at Bristol, and he finished 15th there, 13th at Martinsville, 15th at Phoenix. Yes, he's very good at short tracks and short track racing. He has one 14th place finish here in from 2017. Other than that, he's yet to finish better than 22nd in his other four races. I think, you know, he'll move up some spots, I think. I think Priest is just a better way to go for GPPs. Maybe Cash Games, Ty Dillon might be a little safer. And FanDuel, I like him over there. He really does have a tendency to finish his laps. He's finished 100% of his laps on the season, finishing on the lead lap 50% of the time. You can't say about any of the other drivers I'm going to talk about going down. You know, does have a knack for staying up there, so I always love him on FanDuel with how the scoring lends itself over there. Might be a guy that gets, you know, lucky dog spot, sniffs the lead lap for a good while, maybe finally succumbing to getting lapped in like the second stage or so. It sounds about right. Maybe a third stage, but yeah, that's the kind of play you could expect from him. And he's not super cheap anymore either. 6,400, right about where he should be, I think. Daniel Hemric, another guy that really overfinished last week, finishing fifth. Yeah, he's about $6,200, starting 23rd. He's shown to be worse at these types of tracks, like by not a significant margin, but we have seen him, his averages drop at these 750 horsepower tracks. You know, we probably see him finishing around where he starts or so, maybe cracking the top 20, but I like the plays around him more than actually using him there. Yeah, I don't like the RCR cars all that much this week. You got Ross Chastain starting second to last and 36th. And even though he's had a pretty slow car every week, this week, the speeds, I guess, they don't really matter as much because you're pretty much running single file. You just don't have to be crazy slow, which it doesn't look like he's crazy slow or anything. But his finishes recently, I think, are going to lead people to playing him. He's finished in the top 30 four times in a row. We know all last year, he pretty much always finished top 30, even though he always had a bottom, like, you know, 30th or worse car. He always just survives and ends up sticking it out to the end. And starting 36, that's an easy, like, 7 to 10 place differential that you can expect from him. He debuted here with a 20th place finish in the 2017 spring race. Has crashed every time in the fall race, 28th in the spring race last year. So, you know, a 30th to 20th place finish, probably, you know, depending on the carnage we see, it could happen. But if there's not very much carnage at all, he is a guy that is going to go laps down, so I would play him for the upside, but I wouldn't, like, go in on him. You know, I wouldn't play him in cash, things like that. Bubba Wallace, starting 27th, has finished 23rd and 25th here last year. He, I don't know, he's not someone I'm too huge on there, but in the 5K range, I think he's about as good of a play as you can ask for. I think he's a little bit better than Hemric, Chastain, and Reagan, and Tift, and LaJoy after him. So I think just by sort of lack of really great options here, I'm probably going to end up on a little more Bubba Wallace than I intended on. Then David Reagan, also starting 24th. I kind of like him there, and usually I think he's better at these steeper tracks too. Made some really long runs. He was kind of the slowest of all the 20, 25, 30 lap guys, but he did put a good amount of... He didn't really put a ton of laps in the car. He just had one really nice long run that he used. And, you know, he's, I know he outperforms his equipment oftentimes, but he really has yet to crack the top 20. It's been, he hasn't cracked the top 20 since Atlanta, second race of the season. So I don't know. I'm not really that huge on Reagan this week, starting 24th. Not too much Not too many spots to gain, I don't think. You've got Matt Tift. Oh, he's starting to become a very popular guy, getting a lot of ownership each week, and he's starting 32nd. Probably a pretty decent spot for him. He can move up past a few of the guys ahead of him. Landon Castle's ahead of him. I don't know about Buescher. I don't think he's passing him, but the guys starting behind him are going to stay behind him. I can tell you that. You know, his front row motorsport buddies are kind of starting right around him, so he's just the one of them starting, you know, farthest back. He's starting about 8-6 spots behind Reagan and McDowell, which he'll hopefully emulate, but probably won't. He's gonna find himself laps down, probably first stage, you know, so his upside is kind of neutered. Again, I'm going to tell you not to play pretty much anyone from here on out because, you know, this is just an awful place to play the guys in the very back, especially on DraftKings. Anyone 28th through 37th, I guess it's 27th through 37th in this field. Just let the back end guys, they have less upside here at this track than they do at any other track. So I'm just not going to like any of these guys. Corey LaJoie starting 28th. He's been driving a little better recently, but no. Michael McDowell starting 26th. He does have some better finishes here. Has a 20th, a 19th, a 22nd in the last few years. But, you know, $5,300, he's a lot cheaper than his front row teammates. And it is kind of disturbing that he's cheaper than Tiff because he's, like, better than Tiff. But his finishes have been abysmal. He's crashed a few times in a row. Had the 15th in Texas. But other than that, it's been all, like, bottom 10 finishes. Just very unlucky campaign so far for him this year. So very risky play at $5,300 and starting 26. I don't even think his like upside for moving up spots is too much, but in top 20, probably not going to finish top 20. Honestly, you might just hope for like a 21st place finish or something, and you'll have to settle for that, and I don't know if that's winning it too much, but he's just super cheap on DraftKings. And then the rest of the guys are just super scrubbed. You're not going to play these guys. Like Sorensen starting last. I understand that Sorensen just finished, what, like 18th? But that's Talladega. He's going to finish like 35th. He's going to move up a couple spots and be worth like nothing. You want 15 fantasy points at most, because that's pretty much where you're going to get from Sorensen. These guys here, Ware, Castle, McLeod, Hoff. You don't want to play these guys. This is the worst spot to play them. On DraftKings, at least. If we look at FanDuel here, I guess maybe Sorensen, if he does tend to at least try to finish his races. He's finished 3 of 4 races this year. And if you look at Quinn Hoff, he's actually at least attempted and finished like all his races. Finished 96% of his laps. He's $2,500, but that's kind of extreme. On FanDuel, if you're punting, you know, Matt Tift at 4,000, Chastain at 4,000 with a little place differential there. Priest at 6,200, Buescher at 6,800. That's a way to go on FanDuel, I'd say. So really not liking these guys that are super cheap this week for obvious reasons, especially with the long green flag runs expected. These guys are getting lapped and they're going down a lot. They're not going to do anything for you on DraftKings, but again, Dominator is going to be a huge deal here, just so important. And in the Domination Station, you're probably going to want to lock in at least two Dominators. Maybe, you know, there is a chance that, you know, you get Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr., Kurt Busch, starting a bit farther back. I would just mark those guys as Dominators just to be safe and maybe run them also. Because Kyle Busch could still dominate starting 22nd. So if you do that, definitely lock in the at least two Dominators. Or if you just want to, you know, have the Dominators be the guys in like the top like 5 or 6 or something, then just do the at least one. Just to make sure you get the one guy for like stage one. And that's also a good strategy there. So yeah, I'll have notes up later tonight, at least by tomorrow morning. And be sure to check in. Before the race tomorrow, I'll be on the radio like I usually am on the Horn FM at 11:30 EST, and we'll have the updated, hopefully we'll have the manufacturer odds and the caution flag props out tomorrow. Definitely F5 in the sports books, because those are always super helpful. And yeah, that's pretty much what I got for you guys. And best of luck this week with your race at Dover. And we'll be skipping next week for Mother's Day. Not going to be a races. Enjoy your time with your mother. And I'll see you guys in 2 weeks for the Kansas race. Again, remember, DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. Get you that lifetime 20% off, and it'll support the pod. And I will see you guys in 2 weeks. See you then.